This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by our good friends at FreshBooks. Check out freshbooks.com/TDI.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of The Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Inflation is in the house. U.S. dollar plunges to a four-year low. Stocks recoup some losses and the VIX drops 60%. All this and much more on episode number 548 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And a happy belated Valentine's Day to everybody. This is Andrew Horowitz, the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks for joining me. I really do appreciate you spending some time with me over the weekend and in through the week, talking about markets and finance and some educational materials and just really trying to get to the bottom of what's going on to make you more successful in the area of investing and your long-term prosperity, security, and hopefully some happiness. That's kind of be mixed in there somehow. We did see a wild week after some wild weeks last week, didn't we? I mean, we saw that the markets dropped from top to bottom from the end of January through the second week of, or just about the second week of February, about 12% for both the NASDAQ and the Dow. NASDAQ was a little bit better off. The Dow and the S&P really took it hard. But about 12% drop in a two-week period is pretty significant, no matter how you slice it. We always know, and we've always talked about how corrections happen a lot faster than bulls. In other words, to get to a 7% unbelievable return, it took the entire month of January. That was considered outsized. That was considered really a significant move by any standard. Markets oftentimes will move up slowly through time. And when there is a crack, a correction, we see it happen very quickly. Now, that doesn't mean that it's, when I say it happens quickly, that doesn't necessarily mean that it happens and then it's over. Because there's remnants. Tom McClellan wrote a great piece this week, and he talked about the rogue wave theory, how when you have out of nowhere this rogue wave that comes in the ocean that does a significant damage, maybe turns your boat upside down, maybe rolls over the coast and takes down the few blocks of apartment buildings and houses along with it, that it looks like it's over. But then what happens the backside? There's that dip down because you have, after the rogue wave, a very significant depression. And essentially, maybe the waters go out. You think about it. When you have tidal waves and tsunamis, what happens first? The water goes out significantly, disappears, and people are like, hey, look at that. That's cool. And they go running out on the beach. And then what happens? They get taken down by the next wave that's going to approach. And then it just rises up. And in the case of a tsunami, it rises up and it kind of buries everything. And then just it reverses as well, almost as quickly, and takes everything out to sea with it. The question is going to be, is that going to be the case with markets? In other words, right now we saw that there was a relative calm that happened this week. People were, you know, thinking, well, it's over, right? That this big market situation was rationalized by, oh, it was an event with the VIX. It was something crazy with relation to how market participants and algos and high-frequency traders reacted to this VIX event with this big downturn that was unexpected, and it really caused a lot of havoc. People were having to close positions because they were getting margin calls, and just, you know, you go down the litany of reasons why, and what happens is that then we get the backside of this, which is the rationalization, looking at, well, okay, maybe it's over. The fundamental backdrop is still good and earnings look like they're good. And we have less regulation, of course. And all the people on TV are saying things are really okay. And that it was just an aberration. So we get all this rationalization that's going on. But the question I have, and from what to you, is what's next. Now, let me give you some hints. Let me give you a little bit of insight. I look back and I went through the S&P 500 over time, you know, a pretty long period. And I looked at the weekly returns of the S&P 500, in particular, those weeks that had very significant downturns. I think I may have touched on this a little bit last week, but I looked at, okay, well, what happens when you have a couple of consecutive weeks of really bad numbers? You know, we're talking about 5 and 6% weekly drops, a couple of weeks in a row. There's not that many of them out there, but there's been several. What happens is that usually what you find is that the week following this 2 week or so real pummeling in markets is followed by a very quick rebound. It's happened time and time again. And from there, what happens? That's the question next, right? What? Well, okay, fine. Does that make sense? We get some rebounding in the market. People are looking for value. People that hadn't been in are saying, hey, maybe I'll get in. We'll talk about that in a moment. And then what happens next? What I found was that pretty much on, as you would expect, that there was that rebound the following week or so, that the next week there was some retesting and stomach churning types of moves to the downside again. And if you think about that from a psychological standpoint and a market structure standpoint, that makes kind of sense, right? So let's kind of talk through this. So when you're looking at an event where you see a 10% correction over a two-week period, there's a lot of players out there that are saying, hey, you know what? I loved this market before, and I'm bullish. And unless something really changes dramatically with the fundamental underpinnings of the market, I think that there's great buying opportunities here. So you have that group. They're buying in somewhere along the way to average down their cost and to get into things that maybe they weren't in before because they thought were too pricey, and now the prices are much better. So what happens is you get that wave. You get the regular players that are looking at technicals like the 50-day or the 100-day or the 200-day support on the moving averages and saying, you know, we're buying in here, whether it's a stock or an index. Okay, so you got two levels of supportive actions going on with the markets. And then you have a whole breed of others that are saying, wow, I missed out on something. Look at that big rise over the last couple of months. I'm not doing that again. I'm not missing out on this again. I'm getting in. Now, that last grouping, the FOMO group, the fear of missing out group, is probably the weakest hands in the market. Because what happens is with those players, they're kind of halfway in, halfway out. They're like, all right, I'll get in. I'll ride this. I really didn't like the markets. I thought they were overvalued. But now that we have a 10% drop, you know what? I'm going to put some money to work. So what they do is they get in. However, at the first sign of trouble, they're like, oh man, I made a mistake. Oh man. You know about that, right? You probably had this happen to you before. I made a mistake. So now if you look at, and there's probably a couple other groups in there, but if you look at all of this together, what you find is there are those strong hands that have been in the market, will continue to be in the market, that believe that there was an event that maybe is going to be a short-lived event. Regardless of what happens, they're probably going to be investing in the markets anyway. Even if it goes down 20%, 30%, they'll keep on buying. So you have those being supportive mechanisms. By the way, you also have the short sellers who are probably covering positions. They're saying, you know what? We saw a big downturn, much bigger than was expected. It happened over a short period. We know historically that resolves itself pretty quickly in terms of the next week. Let's get our shorts covered, collect our profits, and move on. So you have that going on as well. So when you add all these together, you have the strong hands. You have the institutional players buying at certain levels, not really caring about the fact that there's going to be, pain or not, because they're buying on these support points. That's what they do. They have cash to put to work. And then you have the weak hands, the FOMO players. On top of that, we talked last week about the rebalancing mechanism, that there's probably some rebalancing that's automatically going on in markets because it hit that level and it went down. And it automatically said, well, you are 10% below your allocation percentage, so therefore you're going to buy back in. So when that gets resolved out, you know, you have that upside that will continue until it does. But again, I looked at this and I said, well, what happens the following week? So now we're looking at this week coming and we'll see how this plays out because it doesn't always work like it's supposed to. You know, the best laid plans. But historically, what we've seen is that there's been a usually a 2 week drop, a 1 week rip on the upside because of all the reasons we outlined, and then potentially a very concerning reality check the next week where the weak hands get spewed out and then there's some follow through on the downside. We'll see what happens. Right now, there's still, you know, for whatever it's worth, the more times we have these drops that are quickly resolved, the more people's confidence goes up. It's going to take a lot to really break the confidence. Already, by the way, remember how we talked about last week the whole VIX complex imploding and how $3.9 billion of assets were just evaporated overnight and how those strategies were now bankrupting all sorts of different players out there? Well, already we see that the same strategy is being put in place again. Not even a week later after a 90% implosion of their total strategy, are they waiting to get back in and ride that horse right back up? Looking at that VIX, which is down about 60% from its high, looking to get back on that short VIX strategy in a big way. So it's going to take a lot to shake the confidence, the broad-based confidence. And I'm not saying that anything really should, but I'm just trying to give you a little bit of a game plan in terms of what we're planning for over the next couple of weeks. So I think that there is the potential for a roll-up last week like we saw, and I think that was pretty well done. And now the question is, you know, what do you do moving forward? And we laid out some game plans a little bit last week. We had some great guests on. We had Danielle Park that talked about, you know, holding some cash aside for just these opportunities. And we talked about how there is this whole notion that, you know, you want to keep some powder dry into market corrective actions and maybe corrective actions with an individual name that you like that may be dropping for the, quote, wrong reasons. But do yourself a favor. Don't get stuck on one side or the other. You know, here's where things get really kind of crazy and squirrely with investors. Because you need to stay smart. And of course, emotions are really important. And I think the problem comes in is when we have excessive emotions that make us do improper things. For example, if we're investing due to greed or fear, you need to check yourself. You need to say, why am I making this decision? If you're making a decision that is based on irrational information that goes into the brain, if you're getting all hot and bothered, first of all, you have to obviously check what your level of appropriate risk is. Okay, we talked about that as well last week. But the bigger issue is that don't make a decision right away based on either fear or greed. Step away. Back up. Pull your finger off the button. Take a stroll. Take a walk. Find out what's really kind of going through your head here and try to put a little bit of logic back into the decision-making process in order to give you some really good ability to make that decision. Making a decision under duress, even if it's self-imposed, and if it's duress that is being derived from your fear or your greed, if you wait a few minutes, nothing's going to change. I mean, how much is things going to change in a couple of minutes? So think about that. Look to your emotions as a really good guide because sometimes they do give you insight, but don't react to them in a split second. Take some time to understand what it is that you're feeling before you make a decision. And yeah, there's some caution that should probably still be appropriate in the markets right now. Are we out of the woods? A lot of people are asking. I want to discuss what actually I think is going to be the drivers and what to look at in a moment. But before we do that, let's get to our great sponsor, which is FreshBooks. And you know what's what I found about FreshBooks, and I kind of wrote down some notes here about what's really cool. You go over to get a free trial and check out all the great features over at freshbooks.com/TDI. But they have these wonderful dashboards to answer all sorts of questions that you may have as a business owner. How's my business doing? You don't have to guess and wonder what's going on. How much is overdue in terms of receivables? How much is going to be billed in the future? There's unbelievable notifications that come out. It's like kind of a personal assistant in a way. Automated late payment reminders. Somebody owes you some money. You can actually, this is pretty cool. You can actually take pictures of receipts on your iPhone or your phone, whatever phone you have, using the mobile app. And you can then have it automatically uploaded and stored so you have that immediately available to you. You can track all of your expenses either that way or just manually if you want to just type it in. Time tracking, and whether you do it on the app or the desktop, it's all there. So FreshBooks really gives you not only insight, but it gives you a great new tool to really make your business more efficient and really create a lot less work for you. That's the whole point here, right? If you could be doing all the work that you're supposed to be doing, you know, and not dealing with the stuff you're not supposed to be doing, maybe you can make some more money. So check out FreshBooks over at freshbooks.com/TDI. So what is moving the markets? I tweeted some of this over the last week, but clearly there's some issue about the concern about inflation. Yeah, that's definitely something. But really what I looked at was, where do I see the highest correlations? What's actually happening? What's making stocks move up and down? And I can tell you, I think it has to do with the fact, very clearly, that the U.S. dollar has been moving down. We're at a four-year low on the U.S. dollar. 4 years. That's pretty significant. Because if you look at what has gone on with the fact that all of the inputs that should have actually been pushing up the dollar, the inflation rate, the Fed, interest rates, strong economy, all the things we've talked about over the last few weeks about what should be creating a strong dollar and it's not, then you know something is not right. On DH Unplugged this week, I discussed this with John C. Dvorak, and I said, you know, I think what really this boils down to is the realization of the fiscal irresponsibility that's going on in Washington. Whether it's the outsized tax cuts, which are great for companies, but how are we going to pay for them? Whether it's this budget deal that went down with big questions about how we're going to pay for it. The lack of potential taxes coming in, the reality that the assumptions that were made in order to put this forth were really kind of aggressive in terms of how much money would be collected from things like growth that was, you know, purely speculative, and how fast things go. I mean, we had Congress passing bills that were issued the night before. They were 700 pages long. Nobody read it, and they just signed over on it. So did the president. Now, if this was happening, and this is what I brought to the show on Tuesday, if this was happening in any other country around the world, don't you think you'd be looking at them saying, let me get this straight. We have incredible amounts of deficits that are going to grow in this country. We have the leaders of this country signing bills that they don't even know what's inside of it because of political reasons. We have an inability to pay for some of the spending that's going on, and the fact that the Fed may be raising rates. So maybe we'll sell their bonds and get out of that currency for a little while. Maybe there's better opportunities. Even with the hot CPI numbers, and by the way, they were hot last week. Every number that we saw, generally speaking, there's PPI, CPI, all hot. Clearly showing that there is a underpinning of some inflationary pressures, which makes sense with the wage increases that we recently saw and the jobs numbers that we've been seeing. There is CPI that is creeping in. But more on that in a second. In the meantime, What we are seeing is that the dollar and the relationship of the dollar, particularly to the euro, and how the dollar has been falling has been very good for equities in the U.S., and that has been supportive. If you look back to where the last low came, which was about the 26th of January, and how from that point we saw a turnaround, pretty much after Mnuchin said that, hey, a strong dollar is in the best interest of the U.S. as a country and all that, blah, 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 and how the dollar turned around from there and started rising, that seemed to set off some alarms in the stock market and what was well correlated to exactly the downtrend we saw over the last couple of weeks prior to this week in the markets. And once that resolved and once there was no further downside that was going on, what do we see? We saw that the dollar continued its move back down to the base. And lo and behold, markets went up. If you watch this even on a 10-minute basis and you put a chart of the Dixie and the Euro and the S&P 500, the Dow, put the markets all next to each other, you'll see they're almost ticking in tandem. And when we finally started to see that there was some commentary out of Japan, the Japanese yen started to weaken a little bit, but not much, because it's pretty hard to stop this freight train right now of a dollar down. Now, I believe that we are pretty much getting close to somewhere of an undervaluation of the U.S. dollar. And while that is good for multinationals and stocks inside of our country, it is going to be inflationary. There's no question about that. Things will cost more as the dollar weakens. So that is going to bring inflation concerns back. It's going to be this entire loop that will continue, that then we'll say, well, the Fed's going to increase rates and therefore we may have something going on. I will tell you that it doesn't seem to me, at least, that the move on the dollar can be, it just doesn't seem that it could be long-lived in this downtrend, because other countries that have been talking down their currencies for years are probably going to start right back up on it, Japan and Europe. While Mario Draghi recently talked about how, well, their employment has really come back very strongly, the growth of their economy is much stronger than they anticipated. Those things I think he's going to regret talking about. And as a central banker, it's his job to levelize the overall currencies and the markets in terms of the cross-border markets of trading. And things are getting a little out of whack. The low dollar is going to actually hurt the exports of other countries. There's no question about that. So we're getting some really good balance in emerging markets and foreign stocks and things of that nature, because obviously you're getting, if the dollar is down 10% against the currency, well, if you're buying that ETF or you're buying that stock, you're getting some nice upwind of movement because of the dollar's move. But that is inflationary. I don't think markets really care about this right now. They're looking past this. They're saying, you know, the hell with it. When the CPI number came out last week, yeah, futures did drop off and then they rallied right back. Why? Why? Because we're getting rationalization, this bullish exuberance in this market that still hasn't left. We have these narratives that are going on. I posted this on Twitter last week. I was saying, regarding this morning's hot CPI number, this is what I expect the bullish narratives to be. Tell me if you've heard these. This was last week, right after the CPI number came out. I said, well, it was expected. So you've heard that. Could be an anomaly. That was something that I thought they'd start talking about. Of course, it's transient, very noisy data. You can't really rely on that. You know, of course, when it moves in their favor, whether it's on the bullish or bearish side, they're going to take whatever it is and kind of try to use that. But it moves against them, they're going to try to put all these excuses. How about, well, year over year is still tepid. Still only just at the 2% level. Of course, you got the rationalization of, well, it's good for the economy. Still shows strength. You know, right? The eco backdrop is still strong. And of course, well, of course, this is normal during expansions. This is just a normal situation that we see on a regular basis and should be inflationary. And we should see this kind of movement in inflation during expansionary and growth spurts. It's good for a country. It's good to see this because the opposite would be a deflationary environment. And that doesn't seem to be anything that would be, you know, really beneficial. So you have all of this going on and all of these rationalizations going on. And even though we saw that CPI was year over year 2.1%, we saw retail sales were a little bit flat. We saw that the month over month CPI was up 0.5% versus a 0.4%. But get that number again, 0.5% month over month. That's pretty significant. You have a inflation number that they're trying to talk down by rationalizing this and saying, oh, yeah, we could still keep all this going and all that. But you know what? When you look at the valuation levels of stocks and you have to readjust those based on, you know, what's happening with the interest rate environment, which, by the way, is you know, we're starting to get a little bit better movement on interest rates. They're starting to come back a little bit, but we hit close to what, 2.9% on the 10-year. Now that will back off a little bit because it moved up so quickly, and I expect to see that. That's kind of good. But again, you have to wonder about what happened last week and what to do in the future. Now, I'm not saying take everything off the table. I didn't say that. I still think, and I agree, that there is a good fundamental backdrop for the economy, generally speaking. But there are other factors that we need to look at right now because we've kind of gone over the fence. Before, while there was a good fundamental backdrop and the Fed was seen as kind of staying out of the way, now they're kind of, they're players. They're definitely players now. And when we look at what is happening with regard to, you know, earnings and in relation to potential growth, I mean, I think we had a pretty darn good quarter here. I do not expect to see these kind of numbers in the future. A lot of things were related to the latest tax, the tax cuts that were put in. That's a one-time deal. A lot of one-time numbers were taken. Now, companies will benefit, but what I always love to see, and I've seen this 100 times, I've seen it once, is people on TV and on radio talking about how the markets are a forward-looking mechanism. Stocks will price with all the information that is known now and into the future. Yet somehow, miraculously, stocks are not pricing in the tax cuts. How did that happen? How did that happen? In other words, a lot more room to the upside because they're not really being priced in right now. Well, why aren't they being priced in? Why is that? Why has this been the one area that people are saying that, don't worry about it, we're not pricing in, who cares? I really don't know. I don't understand why that would be the case. I don't think that the forward-looking mechanism of the markets is picky. I don't think that it is, would scrutinize every single possible issue. And why wouldn't people look at stocks and price appropriately what the price should be? It's that the whole idea is stupid. So annoyed. So annoyed by what we hear on TV all the time. It's getting worse and worse too. I think I mentioned this a few times. There's a couple of players on the morning show. I just can't even watch anymore. Can't do it. Now, with the dollar coming down so magnificently, gold saw an amazing run. The U.S. dollar has been really helping that as well. Just started rolling down a little bit. Just a little bit. Towards the end of the week, as we saw that there was the slightest of moves back for the euro and for the dollar. But again, even with the latest tick that we saw early morning on Friday with regard to the dollar and how the dollar started to all of a sudden move a little bit higher with some more of the evidence that there was inflationary data coming out from the housing numbers and production numbers. It lasted momentarily because the trade is on. The trade is on. The algos are all over the short the dollar trade. The button is pushed. Just like it was in sell mode for 2 weeks. It was in buy mode for 2 years for stocks. And now we're back into buy mode, at least temporarily. as long as that button is pushed for sell the dollar, you're going to see the same thing happen over and over again. It may be reckless. It may be concerning. It may be, you know, really freaking out some people here. I think the worst thing that can happen is we go immediately back up to the highs. I think that really would be disastrous because I think those high numbers that we saw, the levels that we saw with the markets prior, were totally overvalued and doomed to be disastrous. The overconfidence level, the irrational exuberance level, especially if we go very quickly back up to the high, I don't mind a slow move, kind of back and forth a little bit, but if we do a V and go right back up to the highs again and even surpass the highs in short order, that would concern me. That would be more problematic in terms of the next wave of corrective actions than if we just saw another, let's just say a 2% drop, some leveling off, back and forth motion for a little while, indecision, and then eventually, you know, after we see what's happening with economic numbers and some further evidence of growth and expansion in terms of companies' earnings, then that would be good. So just to kind of give you back some of this, the U.S. dollar is a big part of what's going on now. I think that's very clear. The U.S. dollar has been a good way to look at how markets are reacting. And even though it ticked up a little bit but brought down markets significantly, that is a sign there's a lot of, it's very fragile. The relationship is very fragile right now. And I think we have a lot of FOMO in the markets still, because we have these weak hands in there that are trying to just get in no matter what and just throwing their money out there. We talked last week about the whole idea of the selling and buying through ETFs has created a way of investing that is really not discretionary. In other words, you're buying just baskets, just buying giant chunks. And that's why things are moving up and moving down so rapidly. And again, because it's thin out there. So anyway, summing it all up, stay smart. Emotions are important. Keep them in check. Realize that markets went from a -7 on our proprietary key reversal indicator, which is the most it could be, pinned at a -7. To back to fully resolved in markets are now in equilibrium. The dollar is a big part of all this. And we need to keep aware of the fact that there is some precedent that after a few weeks of downstroke and then a week or so of upstroke, that there is the potential for a roll down and for retest. Kind of, again, to wring out all the weak hands. It seems to be a play. Well, by the way, we're keeping the show a little bit short this week. I'm going to be going, having a couple days out of town. So keeping it just a little bit short because some of the research I usually do over the weekends, I was partying with Adam Curry and Tina down in Austin. The other thing I want to mention real quickly is Bitcoin. We saw it move above 10,000 again this week for the first time in some time. I mean, it went down to about, 6,000 or so? Seemed like a real sleeper. For a while, that's it. You know, kind of let it sit there. Sat at 6,000, a little bit over, a little bit under. I don't think it went under 6,000. 6,100 or so, then 7,000, backed off. Just kind of like not the usual craziness that we've seen historically. But it was very interesting to watch that how over the last several weeks, as many regulators backed off, there was less talk from regulators, no question about that. And I'll tell you something else. Not only was there less talk, there was a softened stance by regulators that we saw that they kind of like said, well, okay, we didn't really mean that. You know, Bitcoin and all that, we're going to be careful about it. Everybody just be careful. And even in Japan, they decided they're going to have an SRO to watch over the crypto markets. What's an SRO? A self-regulatory organization that's going to be made up of the players in the space that they will then have they will have oversight of the industry. Yes, that is foxes watching the hen house, but we do that here. You know, the SEC is an SRO. But with that particular area of cryptocurrency, it seems to me that they took the easy way out, Japan, and figured, ah, what the hell, we're not dealing with this. We don't understand it anyway. Let them put something into place. I don't want to deal with this. That's the way it looks, at least to me. So we're going to watch what happens with this whole cryptocurrency. You know, I was still seeing some things moving on news. Litecoin went from 130 to 230 in a week or so with this whole thing about, well, this new breed of Litecoin that was out there. There was some nice movements in the underlying altcoins. And that was kind of interesting to see as well, but still not the same oomph that we've seen for some time. I don't know if it's going to come back to the markets. There was that spurt after Thanksgiving that was unbelievable. But again, in the crypto markets, we've seen this. We've seen that there's been interest, then it lays down for a while. It goes down. People are like, I'm done with this. Then all of a sudden it starts, sparks up out of nowhere and something else happens. And there could be something that happens in the industry or some news that comes out. And then there's interest again that is, you know, blossoms off of it. But I don't know really what's going to happen right now in terms of, you know, where we are with regard to the longer term with this, because it doesn't seem to me that there, you know, is as much interest at this point of time. But that, again, is probably just one more leg in this story that's not over just yet. So just something to consider. We're going to end it here today. We're going to end it a little bit early, like I said, because I've been out of town, but I did want to make sure we got that out. I'll mention that you can ask questions to me. We have a few that I'll save for next week over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Just go to the Ask Andrew section. And of course, there's a lot more on thedisciplinedinvestor.com that you can check out as well, because all of the strategies are there. And I've talked to you last week. I punched you in the face with this last week. I said, now is the time to start thinking about better diversification of your portfolios, looking at the options, looking at possibly some hedging out over the long haul, not just right now, but looking out, hedging out some portfolio risk. And that is all available through the TDI Managed Growth Strategy. Also over on Investology. A lot of you last week came into Investology. So if you thought about this, like, what the heck is that? There's links on the Disciplined Investor to go there. Investology.com. You can go there. You can get your free assessment of what your risk factors are. Very, very easy to set up a portfolio. $10,000 minimum. Check that out as well. And make sure to be there on Tuesday night when I'm with John C. Dvorak talking about all the escapades that I had with Curry over the weekend. I'll kind of talk about it there. Thank you so much for your support. And what else? Oh, and the book recommendations have been great. Have been just great. Thanks so much. I'll see you again next week.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.